PharmRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iPharmRx, and today we're going to be talking about chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD for short, and the use of tiotropium, an anticholinergic agent often prescribed to patients with COPD, but typically reserved for those patients with persistent moderate to severe symptoms. Now, patients with mild or intermittent symptoms often use short-acting or long-acting beta agonists. The recently published Tiotropium in Early Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease Patients in China, better known as the TAI COPD study, was recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine in September 2017. And joining me today to talk about the TAI COPD study are returning iPharmRx authors Amy Robertson and Michelle Peel. Dr. Robertson is on faculty at the University of Kansas School of Pharmacy and practices at the Wesley Family Medical Residency Clinic in Wichita, Kansas. And Dr. Peel is on faculty at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences and practices at the VA Healthcare System of the Ozarks in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Well, Amy, Michelle, welcome back to the iPharmRx podcast.
Thank you, Stuart. We're happy to be here and looking forward to discussing the TAI COPD trial today.
Thank you as well. We're happy to be back on the podcast.
So before we get started, Amy and Michelle, I want you to imagine you're seeing a 65-year-old patient, Mr. W, who's a Vietnam veteran in the primary care clinic today. And the patient was recently diagnosed with COPD. Given the patient's long-standing history of tobacco use, a 50-pack-year history of cigarette smoking, the primary care provider ordered pulmonary function tests after Mr. W. complained of some chest tightness, intermittent coughing, and shortness of breath when walking upstairs or uphill. Now, the patient was given a prescription for an albuterol inhaler to be used as needed for shortness of breath. Patient also has a history of high blood pressure, for which he takes amlodipine and low-dose hydrochlorothiazide. He currently weighs 184 pounds and has a BMI of 26.4. His blood pressure today is 128 over 74, and most of his recent labs are all within acceptable limits. The results of the pulmonary function test indicate that the patient's FEV1 to FVC ratio is 0.66. And his FEV1 is 83% of predicted, based on his age, height, and sex. Now, the patient was referred to you to provide patient education, and specifically, the physician wants to make sure that Mr. W can use his inhaler properly. So before we get into the specifics of the TAI COPD study, which you both critically examined in your commentary, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that are going through your mind in this particular case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter? And are there any additional treatment options you'd be considering at this point?
So looking at this case initially, it is important to note that the patient has several risk factors for COPD, including his age, a significant smoking history, and a potential exposure to defoliants or other chemicals while serving in the military. The patient is also complaining of pertinent symptoms. So with the presence of the risk factors and current symptoms, I agree that it was appropriate to perform the initial screening for COPD with pulmonary function tests. Based on those results, the patient meets the COPD diagnostic criteria with a post-bronchodilator FEV1 to FVC ratio of less than 0.7. According to the 2017 GOLD guidelines, the next step in COPD assessment is determining the degree of airflow limitation using FEV1. According to Mr. W's spirometry results, his FEV1 was 83% of the predicted value, which would place him into GOLD grade 1, indicating minimal airflow limitation. The next step is to assess the patient's symptoms and risk of exacerbation to place him into an A, B, C, or D group, with A being comprised of the most well-controlled patients and group D being the most severe and high-risk patients. It is this classification scheme that will help to determine the most appropriate pharmacotherapy option for this patient. However, with the information we have so far on Mr. W, we're not able to classify him into a treatment group until we can gather more information on his exacerbation history and his symptoms using the MMRC or CAT questionnaire. If we use the CAT questionnaire specifically, we will need to get more information on his mucus production, limitation with home activities, confidence leaving home despite his breathing difficulties, quality of sleep, and level of energy to better understand the severity of his disease. But from what we know about this patient so far, it does not appear that he has a history of a COPD exacerbation. If once we gather more information on the patient's symptoms and we find out that he scores less than 10 using the CAT questionnaire, the patient would fall into group A, and a reasonable option would be to continue his short-acting albuterol inhaler as needed for symptoms. However, with the symptoms that the patient has described, it sounds like he may have a CAT score greater than 10, which would place him into group B, and at that point, he may qualify for a long-acting maintenance inhaler. Another key aspect of this patient's care is discussing his smoking status and assessing his willingness to quit, as smoking cessation is one intervention that we know can minimize further disease progression. If this patient is ready to quit smoking, I would consider recommending nicotine replacement therapy first, and given the patient's extensive smoking history, a higher dose nicotine product would likely be most appropriate. Based on the 2017 GOLD guidelines, I would also recommend an annual influenza vaccine, the pneumonia vaccine series, and regular physical activity. So those are some of the things that are going through my mind when approaching this case, but at this point, we need some additional information from the patient to make a definitive decision on the best COPD treatment plan.
So in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx entitled Therapy for Early Stage COPD, What is the Golden Regimen? You talk about the role of anticholinergic drugs in patients with COPD. So briefly tell us about some of the earlier evidence using anticholinergic drugs in patients with COPD and when the GOLD guidelines currently recommend that they be used.
For a review of the earlier evidence, I'm going to focus on long-acting anticholinergic agents, and it would be pertinent to start with the UPLIFT trial. The original UPLIFT trial found that tiotropium compared to placebo improved lung function, exacerbation rate, and quality of life in patients with GOLD grade or stage 2 or 3 disease. However, tiotropium did not significantly reduce the rate of annual lung function or FEV1 decline. In a sub-analysis of GOLD stage 2 patients enrolled in UPLIFT, the investigators noted significant reduction in the rate of post-bronchodilator FEV1 decline and the risk of exacerbations with tiotropium over the 4-year study period. When the UPLIFT results were later stratified to group A through group D COPD patients, improvements in lung function decline were still noted with each group. When discussing tiotropium, the POET COPD trial is pertinent to mention as well. This 1-year trial of tiotropium versus salmeterol in GOLD stage 2 or 3 patients showed tiotropium was significantly more effective at reducing the annual exacerbation rate and increasing the time to first and severe COPD exacerbation. Finally, the last landmark trial I will mention in our brief review is the FLAME trial, which compared two combination inhalers, indicatorol plus glycopyronium versus salmeterol plus fluticasone. The LABA/LAMA combination of indicatorol plus glycopyronium was superior in reducing the annual exacerbation rate. Of note, in the FLAME trial, the majority of the patients enrolled were GOLD Group D patients. So moving on to the current guidelines, anticholinergic agents may be used in any of the 4 treatment groups, which would be groups A through D. Patients may be initially started on one bronchodilator, such as a LAMA, or a combination of 2 bronchodilators, like a LABA/LAMA combination inhaler. If a patient is symptomatic with one bronchodilator, their therapy may be stepped up to 2 agents. The guidelines specifically state that LABAs and LAMAs are preferred over short-acting agents, except for patients with only occasional dyspnea. For patients in treatment group A who have minimal symptoms and no exacerbation history, they should be offered bronchodilator therapy according to the guidelines, and that can be either with a short or long-acting bronchodilator. Patients in treatment group B with more COPD-related symptoms but no history of exacerbation should be started on a long-acting bronchodilator. Patient-specific factors, including cost, tolerability, and dosing, should be used to select this initial bronchodilator, as there is no evidence here to recommend one agent over another. Patients in treatment group C have fewer COPD-related symptoms, but a history of an exacerbation within the last year. From the results of POET COPD and Invigorate, LAMA is recommended as the initial bronchodilator of choice for this class. Finally, patients in group D with more COPD-related symptoms and a history of an exacerbation should be initially started on a combination LAMA-LABA inhaler.
So the results of the Thai COPD study suggest that perhaps we should be using tiotropium as a first-line treatment for COPD. For those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
This was a multi-center, randomized, double-blind, phase 4 trial conducted in China over a 2-year period to evaluate the effect of daily tiotropium use on the progression of lung dysfunction in mild to moderate COPD as compared to placebo. The study included patients 40 to 85 years of age with gold grade 1 or 2 COPD. They excluded those with a recent COPD exacerbation and those with a history of asthma. The primary efficacy outcome was the between-group difference in the change in pre-bronchodilator FEV1 from baseline to month 24. The investigators also assessed the change in post-bronchodilator FEV1, annual decline in lung function, change in symptom scores, exacerbation rates, and rescue medication usage. The primary outcome revealed a significantly higher pre-bronchodilator FEV1 at month 24 in the tiotropium group compared to placebo, with a between group difference of 157 milliliters. In addition, the mean pre and post bronchodilator FEV1 values were significantly higher in the tiotropium group at each follow-up visit during the study. There was also a significantly slower annual decline in post bronchodilator FEV1 in the tiotropium group. Similar results were seen in a subgroup analysis of patients with a baseline CAT score of less than 10. In addition, the study revealed a positive impact on exacerbation rates as treatment with tiotropium resulted in a lower risk of exacerbations per patient year and a significantly longer time to first exacerbation with tiotropium. Finally, the results also revealed significantly greater rescue medication use with placebo compared to tiotropium.
So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of the Thai COPD study. Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of the study?
Okay, so I will start with the strengths, as they are limited for this trial. The study design as a multi-center, randomized, and double-blind trial was a strength. The investigators also sought to add to the body of research available highlighting the use of tiotropium in early-stage COPD, which has been somewhat limited. In addition, many of the patients enrolled in this trial had minimal symptoms with CAT scores less than 10. The positive results that Amy described may be applicable in patients with minimal symptoms and earlier-stage disease. However, there are many notable limitations to mention with the Thai COPD trial. First of all, the investigators did not meet their pre-designated power, and they had a very high dropout rate. Secondly, the location of the study in China brings an interesting caveat to this study, as smoking and environmental exposure rates may be different there than in the United States. The duration of follow-up for the Thai COPD trial was only 24 months, which is significant given the pathophysiology and likelihood of COPD progression over time. Also notably, smoking cessation was not mentioned at all during the trial, which is pertinent as smoking cessation is the only intervention with clear evidence for decreasing the rate of lung function decline. The ability of participants to continue previously started maintenance medications, including beta-2 agonists and inhaled corticosteroids, may definitely be seen as a confounding factor.
So, Amy, how should this study change practice? Do you think these findings are sufficiently compelling to change guidelines? Are there specific populations that you think really should receive tiotropium? And what about Mr. W? Would you recommend that he use tiotropium daily?
The Thai COPD trial demonstrated some positive results for the use of tiotropium in gold grade 1 or 2 COPD and has supplemented the limited evidence currently available regarding the effect of medications on minimizing disease progression, particularly in early stage disease. I believe one of the biggest challenges with implementing the results of this study will be identifying patients in clinical practice that benefit most from tiotropium, as these patients will likely have fewer symptoms and may not seek out screening or treatment. The results of this study have not provided us with clear criteria for use, and I am not convinced that the results are strong enough to change guideline recommendations at this point. I think one of the main things to take away from the study is that appropriate use of tiotropium is promising, but needs to be further investigated over a longer period of time. For those in early stage disease, it may be difficult to get patient buy-in to take a daily medication, especially if they have fewer symptoms and their activities of daily living are not significantly limited by their breathing. So for our patient, Mr. W, if we assume that he has not had a COPD exacerbation and has fewer symptoms with a CAT score of less than 10, but is willing to quit smoking, then I would likely recommend therapies to aid in smoking cessation first before recommending initiation of tiotropium. If he refuses smoking cessation at this point, you may engage the patient in a discussion regarding the potential benefits of tiotropium. If the patient has fewer symptoms but a history of a COPD exacerbation, I would be more likely to recommend initiation of tiotropium to decrease the risk of future exacerbations, especially if the patient is willing to take the medication, is able to afford it, and does not have any contraindications.
So, Amy, Michelle, I really want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the early use of tiotropium in patients with COPD. And I think it's clear from your comments that this new evidence is compelling, but it's really difficult to understand which patients might benefit from it most. Many patients who have early stage disease don't have symptoms every day, so asking them to take a medication each day is also a potential problem. And then identifying the patients who have early stage COPD. We really don't do a very good job of that to begin with. And so I think renewed efforts to focus on smoking cessation and identifying patients who are at high risk for COPD is probably the best place to start. Well, tell us what you think. Only iForumRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iForumRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor and chief of iForumRx, signing off.